Yeah. Okay, so we have Jamie, Tiana, Tamisa, myself, and Maridel on the call. So we have five. All right. So, well, this will be a brief call. We have a few things to go over. And actually, Ms. Rice is actually number one on the agenda, where she had mentioned in the last meeting that her office was going to put together a draft for an economist. David, would you happen to have an update on her behalf?
We do. We have Emily here to present.
David, are you on the call?
Sorry about that. Had you on mute.
Okay.
Yeah, as I was saying, we do have Emily here that she's ready to present. It's a summary of the economist and the new rule. So we can go. We can get started if Emily's ready.
So, okay. So our procurement officer did a first draft of the RFP for the economist. It's then been slightly edited, and she's currently out until June 3rd, but she just needs to do one more pass at it before it can be disseminated. But we're basically in the, we have a final draft. We just need to make sure that the final edits encompass procurement policy, but it shouldn't, it's not that many changes, so it should be pretty quick when she gets back on June 3rd. So we'll be able to send you all a draft that week when she gets back, and then you all can review the scope of work. I mean, most of the pages of the RFP is, of course, procurement policy, district procurement policy, so it's only a few pages that are specific to the scope of work and the terms. So that should be ready for you all first-ish week of June.
Okay, great. Are there any questions for Emily? Okay, hearing none.
I just have a question. I remember Ms. Rice saying that they were debating between doing the RFP versus, I'm going to get the term wrong, but like a single source contract. Does this mean that your office determined that we do have to put it out for a full RFP rather than just approaching the economist who did it last time and just done most of the other states?
So from what I understand of the procurement process, we have to write an RFP, and then we can argue that it's so specific that only one person can do it. So we have to still write the scope of the project in terms of an RFP, and then our procurement officer will figure out if we have to go through an RFP process or if we can argue based on that scope that we can do a single source.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you, Emily. Mm-hmm. So we'll move on to number two, the summary of Guideline Commission's final rule. And I believe all of you received a copy of it, correct? Did anyone get a copy of it?
When was that sent? I'm not sure I saw it, but I can pull it up.
David.
Chairwoman, I actually, this is David speaking. I only sent it to you. I didn't send it to anyone else.
Okay. Sorry about that. Okay.
Sorry about that, everyone. I'll make sure that's sent out as soon as we finish this call.
Okay.
Good night.
Okay. Who just joined?
Benita.
Oh, hi. How are you? This is LaShelle.
Thank you.
We have Jamie, Tiana, Tamisa, myself, and David on the call, and Maridel on the call. So thank you for joining us. Okay. Emily, are you still willing to do the summary, and then everyone can review it after the call?
Sure.
I'll give a brief summary of it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give a brief summary of kind of the areas of which we will have to look at based on the new final rule and then the details. If people have any specific questions, we can do that now, but also people can wait to review the like 2.5 page document that gives a little bit more context to it. But we might as well go over the kind of general issue areas so that everybody's aware of what we will need to kind of clean up so that we're in compliance. So the first thing that actually we don't have to do anything for is the low income adjustment. There's other states that don't have a self-support reserve, or they don't have a minimum order. We have both. Ours is pretty comprehensive, and so we won't actually need to make any changes to that based on the final rule. We might want to, as a group, discuss what possibilities there are to change it based on other people's opinions, but in terms of the final rule, we're in compliance with the fact that we have those two things already set up. The next few items are ones that we will need to review and potentially either add language or change some of the language that's already there. The first is the ability to pay section. There's two sections in the new final rule that expands on federal requirements calculating or imputing income to consider specific circumstances to the extent known. So the federal office is asking jurisdictions to expand on what both case and local economic data points they review in terms of imputing income or calculating the guidelines. And so this is where the economist would come in and give us all the data points that we would need to then see how we want to implement it in terms of the guideline, the calculator, and those items. So like we said before, for the economist, this includes a lot of data points about local economic data broken down by various points such as education level, age, maybe zip code. These are the things that there's a list that the final rule actually states. Now, they're not requiring states to look at all of these, but they give examples, and a lot of states are actually just adopting the language that's in the final rule to make sure that they're in compliance, so they then won't have to argue that they still are in compliance when it's not the same language. So that's an option for us, but we could also look at other ways of being in compliance for that, but the economist is going to help with that. Also in the ability to pay is, of course, the concentration on the low income side of the scale. And so that's where some additional, we'll have to look additionally at our self-support reserve and minimum order and things like that to make sure that the lower end of the economy, the lower income levels are taken care of appropriately. So maybe I'll pause there in case anybody has questions on either the ability to pay that I just spoke about or the low income adjustment that CSSD has concluded that we're already in compliance for before I go on. Okay, hearing none, I'll move on. There's additional imputation of income requirements. And one of the main differences in the final rule is that the final rule recognizes circumstances where income imputation is appropriate to fill in evidentiary gaps, but it also states that the 40 agency has to take, quote, reasonable steps to develop a sufficient factual basis, and also that we have to exhaust our abilities to gather the evidence and also make sure that there's note of our exhaustion of those tools before imputation is before income is imputed. So again, there are states that are just copying the final rule's language in terms of that. I don't know necessarily how much this is actually going to change things, but again, we want to make sure the language is correct, and there's more details about the current imputation of income as well as the final rule in the document that will be sent out. Now, the discussions around all of these topics in terms of the final rule are in addition to and separate from any additional discussions that commission members might have about any changes that they want to have during this process as well. In relation to that is the finding of facts section of the new final rule, which requires the 40 agency to establish a factual basis for the amount of the initial or adjusted support order, including evidence of income and other circumstances of the non-custodial parent. And so documentation of the factual basis must be on the case record, and that includes use of the local economic data that we will have access to after the economist completes their project. And then transparency section, that we must publish on the internet the members of the Guideline Commission, the reports that go through the Guideline Commission, and the effective date of the guidelines and the date of the next quadrennial review. So we already do that, I believe, but we just want to double check that that's the case. And then the final section is about incarceration. There's a quote from the final rule that says incarceration may not be treated as voluntary employment in establishing or modifying support orders. In practice in DC, unless the crime was committed against the custodial parent, we already take that into account. The NCP is not penalized monetarily, and that we actually modify the support or suspend the order while the non-custodial party is in jail. But the guidelines should codify this specifically, because while it mentions incarceration as something that might affect the parent's ability to pay, it doesn't go so far as to say that incarceration may not be treated as voluntary unemployment. So to make sure that we're in compliance with this part of the final rule, we'll probably want to just add that language in just to close any potential loops. That is the general summary of the new final rule, the topics that we'll go over. Of course, if anybody has any questions about the document once it goes out, we can discuss it, or I can give any additional information as necessary.
Thank you, Emily. Do we have any questions from anyone? Okay. Well, hearing none, then we'll move on. Thank you again, Emily, for the summary.
You're welcome.
And we'll get the copy of the summary of the guidelines to everyone at the end of the call. Did someone else join the call? Okay, I thought I heard a beep. Okay, so we'll go on to item number 3, which are the results of the doodle poll regarding our future meetings. So we had 6 participants for the doodle poll regarding our next meetings between June and December. And from what I can tell, so we had for June 27th, it looks like the time frame we used was still from 4 to 5 and all the dates. The last week of the month, for the most part, except for looks like November and December. And so for June, we're looking at June 27th. We had 5 people, so 5 out of the 6 were fine with that date. That date does not work for me. I'll be out of town that day. So if it's okay with you guys, I prefer to not meet that day and just move to July 25th, or either we can move the date for June. Your feedback?
This is Maribel. I think it's fine to skip the June meeting. I'm okay with that.
Anyone else?
Hi, this is Benita. I don't have any preference, but I'm certainly fine with skipping the meeting. But if you decide that you think that we need to meet in June, I think Thursday, the third week of June, would work as well.
Okay.
This is Tiana. I agree that either skipping the meeting or rescheduling is fine. I'm also unavailable on the 27th. My husband will be traveling, so I'll have to get kids from school.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Well, if there's no opposition, then I'll say let's just skip the June 27th meeting.
or the June meeting altogether and plan to convene again in July. So for July, we have the date of July 25th. We have five of the six who agreed to meet on July 25th from 4 to 5. For August, we have five of the six available on August 29th. September, all six who participated are available September 26th. October 31st, only two people were available, so I recommend that we consider maybe another day in October or the Thursday prior.
I would recommend that this is the NIDA. I think that maybe the Thursday prior to that would be good.
Okay, so that would be October 24th?
Right.
Yes, from 4 to 5. So for all those who are on the call, does anyone have an opposition to October 24th as the meeting day, 4 to 5?
I don't. This is Tamisha.
This is Emily. If we do change the dates, we can also keep the doodle poll constant. Like, people can log back in and change their availability at any time on the doodle poll, and we can add dates so that in the future we can still use that as a reference for upcoming meetings.
Perfect. Okay. Okay, so we'll move it to October 24th, 4 to 5. And then in November, we have November 21st, which we have five of the six that can make it. And then the last one of the year would be December 19th. And five of the six are available that day.
I thought we had said we might try to not meet in December if we kind of had made good progress before then. Are we still thinking that?
Yes, I'm fine with that. But for purposes of David having to post it to the public, the dates that we're going to meet, then he has the full schedule through the end of the year. And so, as you stated, if we get close to that date or November, we're like, we really don't need to meet December, then we can cancel it at that time.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks.
No problem. Okay. Well, great. So what we'll do is we'll send out all the dates that we'll meet so that everyone can populate their calendars with it. And then pending any other changes, we may have to make changes as we go along. But for now, we have these dates to work with. Okay, great. And then the last item is an update on the Mayor's Office Additional Commissioner. So for some of you who may have come on late, we have Tamisa Brooks is on the call, who is also a commissioner. I believe you were sworn in January of last year, were you, Tamisa?
I believe it was, yeah.
Okay. But I had her email address, but evidently I think I had an incorrect one. And so she was not aware that we had been meeting as a group until this week when we were able to catch up with her through a different way. And so she now makes number 8 on the commission. So we're hoping to still get at least one more member. And so the last communication I had with the office, with the mayor's office, that they were still in search of someone, but I got a feeling that they were getting a little close to selecting someone. David, I know that you also put in a call. Did you get any more recent information or current information?
Yeah, this is David. I actually do have very current information. I got a call almost right before this meeting from Mr. William Page, who's with the mayor's office. He indicated that the member had to be from the public. They could not be from our office, which we were hoping to either have myself or Emily join the commission, but we were told that that is not possible.
You dropped out for 1 second. You said that the member
must be from
the public.
Yeah, must be a public from the public DC public the DC community. Can't be a member. Can't be a staff within the DC government.
Got it.
And this is something I asked him to check on. He had mentioned this earlier, that the possibility of there are limitations to new membership, and that's what he mentioned, that it would have to be from DC community, the public, the general community at large. So I'll, you know, we only had a brief conversation. I asked him, please double check on that, because obviously that limits us. And he said, of course, and he'll double check. But he said he was fairly certain that that would be the limitation. So it looks like we have a better idea of who we can recommend, but also it sort of makes things a little more complicated. But we'll figure this out, and I'll stay on top of the mayor's office and to figure out who we can bring on board.
This is Maribel. Can I suggest, I was thinking that Judge Brenneman's planning to leave. I think she's retiring soon. And so someone like that who has experience but then is no longer involved might be good. I know that's not for a little bit. What about Judge Doyle, who used to be on this calendar for a long time?
This is Benita again. I certainly could support Judge Brenneman if we as a member, I don't know, Ms. Franklin, whether or not we as a board would be recommending someone, but I would have no objection to Judge Brenneman. She was outstanding in
yeah,
her
exactly.
time in private service.
Right, and I know she's still sitting on the bench, so I don't know if there's a limit on that. But at the very least, when she does retire, which I think is coming up, I wonder if she'd be interested in staying involved in this way. And again,
how soon do you think this year? You mean sometime this year, this summer?
They actually sent it out. They sent it out saying that she would be retiring.
Yeah.
I think it's fairly soon.
Yeah, I think it is too. And the process for appointment takes a little while. So, again, I don't know if it's proper for us to suggest people, but just wanted to throw that out there because it seems like it might be a good fit as someone who really knows what they're doing with this.
Mm-hmm.
Right. However, I do want to mention again that I think that we do need to have the mayor's office again verify that it is not possible to have a second person from DC government on the panel, because in the past we did have two people on the panel, on the commission, I'm sorry. So I do want to put that place card holder there.
I'm fine with that.
This is David again. Mr. Page was very clear that he said that he's open to any suggestions. So I'll make sure to pressure him on both fronts. And of course, recommendations in general, he was very open to that.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thanks so much. I'm sorry, I don't know much about Ms. Brooks. I wonder, I just wanted to welcome her to the commission and see if maybe she could introduce herself. I don't know that we've ever met.
Sure, Ms. Brooks.
Hi. Yes, Tamisa Brooks. I am a member of the community. I live in Ward 8. And I can't remember who it was that asked me to be part of the committee, but I'm very happy to be here. I work in Ward 7. At EduCare DC as a family engagement specialist. I have a 19-year-old daughter who's in her second year of college at Kalamazoo College in Kalamazoo, Michigan. And I absolutely love being in my community.
Thank you so much, and welcome again.
Thank you
yeah,
so
welcome.
Very much. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to meeting you in person, hopefully at our next meeting in July.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Well, is there anything else anyone has that they'd like to discuss that we haven't discussed on the agenda today? Okay. So we're going to try, moving forward, we're going to try to continue to meet at 441 4th Street because they have the space, and they also have the technology set up, not only for us to do conference calls, but for people to call in or the speaker. And I think you also have video technology. Is that correct, David?
We do. We also have recording. Unfortunately, because we were unable to use the 11th floor, I'm still recording on my phone. So
okay.
I do apologize for that,
thank
but
you.
We'll figure. We'll finally get to work, I'm sure, when there's no tornado warning.
Right. All right, sounds good. Okay, everyone. Well, if there's nothing else, then we will end this call. Thank you again very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.